tag.
91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour, we profile one of the country's leading educators, Miami-Dade College President Dr. Eduardo Padron. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Miami-Dade College is the largest educational institution of higher learning in Florida, and Dr. Padron's been selected to serve on national posts by six U.S. presidents. He's had international acclaim as well and has been on innumerable prestigious boards, but still takes pride in the ever-present slogan, I am MDC, for he is. President Padron attended the school in the 1960s, became a professor in 1970, and as president, guided it to impressive stature as a place where quality education is available at a modest price. That's next. First, it's news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Republican-led House committee that investigated the U.S. response to the 2012 attacks on a U.S. mission in Libya is out with its final report. It alleges that the military acted too slowly in sending help as the diplomatic site came under attack. Also accuses Hillary Clinton, then Secretary of State, and her staff of a shameful lack of response to congressional investigators. Here's the panel's chair, Republican Representative Trey Gowdy of South Carolina.
There is new information on what happened in Benghazi. And that information should fundamentally change the way you view what happened in Benghazi. And there are recommendations made to make sure it does not happen again.
Congressional Democrats reject the Benghazi report as nothing more than Republican attempts to undermine Clinton's presidential campaign. British Prime Minister David Cameron is said to be fending off anger from other European Union leaders at a summit where he's discussing Britain's exit from the EU. He appealed for favorable conditions for Britain post-EU, but as Reuters News Service reports, EU leaders refused to negotiate. Hours earlier, in a special session of the European Union Parliament, Nigel Farage, one of England's most outspoken Eurosceptics, taunted and insulted fellow members over the UK's Brexit vote. The UK's Independence Party leader traded jabs with European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker, who pointedly asked Farage, "Why are you here?" More from NPR's Peter Kenyon.
Diplomacy has never been Farage's strong suit, but European lawmakers were shocked by what some called his gloating attacks.
Isn't it funny? You know, when I came here 17 years ago to get Britain to leave the European Union, you all laughed at me. Well, I have to say, you're not laughing now, are you?
Farage slammed his fellow lawmakers as people who've never held a real job and who are in denial about what he called their failed currency, the euro. He was booed and heckled during his broadside, but perhaps ominously for Europhiles, he got a round of applause for one line, his prediction that the UK would not be the last country to leave the EU. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, London.
Scientists are reporting progress on the development of a vaccine against the Zika virus. NPR's Michaeline Duclef reports they have an experimental vaccine that works in animals and they plan to start testing it soon on people.
Back in January, the World Health Organization declared Zika an international emergency because the virus causes severe birth defects. Right away, scientists from around the world rushed to start making a vaccine. Now researchers at Harvard Medical School say they have two experimental vaccines that completely protect mice from the virus. They report their findings this week in the journal Nature. At the same time, the biotech company Inovio has developed a similar vaccine and just received approval from the Food and Drug Administration to begin clinical trials in people. If all goes well, they hope to test the efficacy of the vaccine in South America or the Caribbean by the end of this year.
Michaeline Duclef reporting. This is NPR.
From the WLRN studios at the Miami Herald, I'm Christine DiMatte. 21 Cuban migrants who took temporary refuge atop a lighthouse off the Florida Keys last month will be sent back to Cuba. A Miami federal judge ruled today that the American Shoal Lighthouse, about 7 miles off Sugarloaf Key, does not qualify as U.S. territory under the United States wet-foot, dry-foot policy. That policy states that migrants who make it to dry land can stay here. Those intercepted at sea must return to their homelands. The migrants fled Cuba by boat and landed on the lighthouse, sparking an 8-hour standoff with Coast Guard crews while they refused to climb off the structure. After the migrants were taken aboard Coast Guard cutters, the U.S. government argued in court that the lighthouse does not qualify as American soil. Pro bono attorneys for the Cubans filed an immediate injunction, and that left the migrants in limbo aboard the cutters for 39 days. Florida has its first confirmed case of a baby born with microcephaly as a result of the Zika virus. Health officials say the mother of the newborn contracted Zika in Haiti. Governor Rick Scott talked about the case at a Zika planning conference in West Palm Beach today. He said the responsibility is on Floridians to keep the Zika virus from spreading locally.
All of us are responsible. We've got to get rid of the standing water so we don't have these mosquitoes breed. If we can stop the mosquitoes, we can make sure that we don't have an expansion of more Zika cases in our state.
Scott said he is disappointed in Congress and President Obama for not being able to arrange more funding for Zika prevention. Florida has about 8,000 test kits to screen for the virus. The Florida Department of Health says the mother will be connected to a state program that offers services to infants and toddlers with developmental delays. The announcement comes a day after health officials confirmed three new cases of the virus in Florida, including one each in Broward and Miami-Dade. As of now, all 213 Florida cases are travel-related. Of those cases, 40 involve pregnant women. This is WLRN Miami Herald News. I'm Christine DiMatte.
Most people know that they should get a colonoscopy. What you probably don't know is how much it could cost, and that in many cases, your health insurance should cover all of it. WLRN wants to know how much you paid. It's part of our Price Check reporting project to bring clarity to healthcare costs. You can share what you paid for a colonoscopy and find out what others paid at WLRN.org/pricecheck.
Support for NPR comes from the financial services firm of Raymond James, offering personalized wealth management advice and banking and capital markets expertise, all with a commitment to putting clients' financial well-being first. Learn more at RaymondJames.com.
And we return 7 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman with you. Well, today is one of our South Florida Profile editions, this time on one of the region's most admired figures, Miami-Dade College President Dr. Eduardo Padron.
He's led Miami-Dade College to remarkable achievements and national recognition while furthering the chances for most anyone with a desire to learn and succeed to do so.
Long before he was a college president, Eduardo Padron was a teenaged immigrant, then a community college student, and later an economics PhD from the University of Florida.
Next, he was a professor, department chair, a dean, campus president, and then the president of Miami-Dade College. He's with us now in the studio, and we welcome you, Dr. Eduardo Padron.
Welcome.
Thank you. What a pleasure to be here with you, Joe, and Bonnie, and I'm delighted that you invited me.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you. And since we're going to go on a journey today, I thought we'd begin with your journey from Cuba when you were 15 years old, a refugee. How difficult was that for you coming here, and under what circumstances did you get here?
Well, it was difficult because I came here with my younger brother, 3 years younger, without my parents, to a new culture, a new language, and with no money in our pockets. So that in itself was, difficult, and not really knowing where we would end up going to. Our parents had the opportunity to send us over. It was at a time when the government was passing legislation that, an edict in which they would take the children from parents under the age of 18 and take them to camps to be indoctrinated, etc., etc. And my parents felt horrified with the idea that that would happen. So to make a long story short, we were able to get, with the support of the Catholic Church, we were able to get to Miami. And when we got here, it just happened that a lady who was awaiting her niece to come in, the niece never came, but she recognized us. We didn't recognize her, but she recognized us as the children of, friends of hers. And she said, "Oh, I'm going to take you home." So she did. She did take us home. She lived in an efficiency. Actually, it was a duplex, and the owner lived next door. And she had a daughter, a small daughter. So we went to live there in a one-room place, which was great because at least we had a place to sleep. But the first thing she told us is you cannot make any noise, you cannot do anything, you cannot even take a shower tonight because we spend the whole day waiting for the plane to arrive and then get on the plane and come to the U.S. Because if the owner who lives next door find out that I have brought two children into the efficiency, I'm going to be asked to leave. So that was the beginning. 3 days later, the owner find out that we were there, and we were kicked out. So we had to go.
All of you, including her?
All of us.
Okay.
All of us. So we had to go and try to find, a place to stay. And that was a revelation for me, because many of the apartments that we went to try to rent had rent signs. The minute they recognized who we were, told us there were no vacancies. And I remember seeing signs in some of the places that we went to look for apartments that said, no Cubans, no blacks, no dogs. And that really was ingrained in my mind at that point. I also had to take a bus to go downtown, for example. And I noticed that all the black people had to go and sit in the back.
Mm. What year is this?
This is 1961.
Okay.
So those were the beginning experiences that we faced. But I have to say, it was tough all around for a couple of years because I had to work and try to go to school and have to do two or three jobs. There were no full-time jobs to consider.
Well,
but
could you touch on your early educational experiences here?
Yes, and that's what made the difference. I have to tell you this. I was admitted to Miami Senior High to do the last year of high school. I also was able to get my brother into another school because he was younger than me. And I would go to that school like from, I think it was 8 o'clock in the morning until about 2 in the afternoon. And from there I would go, and I had two or three different jobs that I was doing, including one that I will never forget of all the jobs, which was ironing at a dry cleaners in the summer with no air conditioning. I still have the marks of the burns that I had at that time. I remember having to take another shirt and something else because I could take whatever shirt I had on or my pants and
wring it out,
and you will get plenty of water out of that. But it was a way of surviving. It was a way of getting basic funds to be able to support ourselves by the food and things that we needed. And if you ask me if I would do it again, I will tell you I have no regrets. That in many ways helped me develop the person that I am. It built my character. It helped me understand the value, the real value of things and the important things in life. So I will forever be grateful for that day that I was able to reach the shores of Miami, and a city that has been very good to me, who has given me plenty of opportunities to me and my family.
So despite all your success, you certainly can still relate to some of the students, the thousands upon thousands of students who go to Miami-Dade College now, many of them of low income, many of them the members of their family to attend college.
You know, that's my passion. I really look forward to going to my office every day and taking the time to talk to students because I see the sacrifices they make. Most of our students have to work in order to go to school. They don't have parents that have the ability to pay for their school. Most of these students really sometimes take two or three buses in order to get to the college. And you know that they are there for the right reasons. I always share with my colleagues, presidents of other universities throughout the country, when they tell me that their greatest challenge is discipline. I tell them, I don't have that problem at Miami-Dade College. We don't have discipline problems. When the students go to the dean's office, is to complain because a teacher is late or is absent.
You mean because they're so grateful to be there?
They're grateful, but they know that's a real ticket to the middle class, that's a real ticket to the American dream. So they're there out of conviction that that's the only way they're going to get out of poverty. They don't take anything for granted, and that makes for the best students, I can assure you of that, because they know the value of education. And these students are wonderful. I say that that generation of students today is much better than even my generation. And they're full of hope and full of, gratefulness for the opportunity to be in college and knowing that that's what's going to bring them to really enjoy the fruits of progress.
Miami-Dade College is the largest educational institution in Florida. It has the most undergraduate students in the United States. That's about 165,000 students from 191 countries, and they speak 90 languages. Talk about diversity.
Well, you will not find a more diverse institution of higher education in the nation. It is a real laboratory of the world. And that's what makes education there so interesting and fascinating, because the students are learning from each other, are able to relate to each other, are able to communicate and to be able to understand, what the world is all about, because they're talking to people from all different countries and places, coming with different languages. And that is something that makes for the best education that you can ever dream for.
You know, I'm going to go back to this a few times, but I listened to a symposium that you were a part of at the museum not too long ago, hosted by the Aspen Institute. And one of the things, because we're talking about diversity, we did yesterday on yesterday's topical currents, in fact, but you were very clear. You said that you can have diversity on college campuses, and it's increased dramatically, and your Miami-Dade is a prime example of that. But you said it's not akin to inclusion. And you stress the importance of having that as a policy at Miami-Dade. Talk about that.
Well, you're absolutely right. Inclusion is very, very important, because what you need is for the students to see themselves reflected in the faculty, to see themselves reflected on the people who are leading the institution. So the message is, if they can do it, I can also do it. And I feel that we have tried very hard at Miami-Dade College for the students to have a real sense of belonging, a sense that they own the place. And many of the problems that several universities throughout the country are facing today, even when they are able to bring a number of minority students, right, a diverse student body, is that those students do not feel they belong. They are not given that sense. So that is something that we have tried very hard throughout the years to do, and I think we have been very successful. Our student body is a very happy student body, and they get along very well, and they are able to accomplish together a lot of great things.
We're speaking with Dr. Eduardo Padron, an educator, president of Miami-Dade College since 1995. So many accolades, so many awards, so many superlatives, widely recognized as one of the top educational leaders in the world. And we're talking to him. We'll resume our conversation, and we'll also include you, our listeners, when we return on Topical Currents.
When putting a baby to sleep, it's recommended that you follow the ABCs of safe sleep. Babies should be alone, on their backs, and in an empty crib. You can protect your baby by following the ABCs of safe sleep. Learn more at hmhbbroward.org. Brought to you by the Children's Services Council of Broward County. Our focus is our children.
The ABLE Trust and its partners are committed to providing opportunities for successful employment to Floridians with disabilities. The ABLE Trust believes that hiring people with disabilities makes for a diverse and inclusive workforce, helping to empower Florida's economy. ABLETrust.org.
The world never sleeps, and neither does WLRN. Help us end the budget year financially strong. Call 866-247-9576 or go online to WLRN.org.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Tuesday edition with Dr. Eduardo Padron. Of course, he's the president of Miami-Dade College. If you'd like to join in, if you'd like to relate your Miami-Dade experience, you're certainly welcome. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email, if you're a little shy, that's radio@WLRN.org.
Or if you just want to get in quicker. So, Dr. Padron, I want to go back because we got you in Miami Senior High, but we didn't really get what it was like trying to get into college and then how you ended up at Miami-Dade and how you ended up coming back to Miami-Dade.
And so it was called Junior College.
Junior Community College.
Actually, it was called Dade County Junior College.
Right, okay.
That's how it was called. Well, the fact of the matter is that during my high school senior year, I heard that there were counselors that could help me talk about college and what the possibilities were. So I went to meet with this wonderful lady who was very friendly, and she was a counselor, and I told her of my ambition to go to college. I related to her the story that my mother, before I left, the last time I saw her, she said, no matter what, you are going to college because that's the way that you are going to make it in America. And after a little while conversing with her, she basically told me that I was no college material. Mm. And she gave me the address of Lindsay Hopkins.
We're sitting on its shell right now.
Right. Lindsay Hopkins, and said, you can go there and talk to them about getting into one of the trades.
Which was a vocational school.
Yeah, and she really meant the best for me, but she didn't have much hope that I would really be able to make it in college. So knowing what I have promised my mother to do, I went and talked to other students, etc. So I took all my employment, part-time jobs, savings, and paid application fees to other universities. And I was so naive at that time, and perhaps so ambitious, that I applied to 10 of the best universities in the country.
Including the Ivy League schools.
They are all Ivy League schools.
All Ivy League, okay.
And to make a long story short, I was rejected by all of them. So a friend of mine said, why don't you go to Dade County Junior College? It's a place that recently opened, and I'm sure they will help you. So this place was very far away because I was living in the Southwest area, and it was on 27th Avenue and 119th. But I was able to, I think I took two or three different buses to get there. I get there, and that changed my life. I found people there who were caring, who really wanted me to have an opportunity, gave me all kind of support, guided me through registration, etc. And then I went there for 2 years, and those were the two best years of my life because I found there people who believed in me, people who said, you can do it, people who basically saw something in me. And that was the beginning of a great journey. I have to tell you this, if you allow me. The irony of all of this is that now, after all these years, eight of those universities, including Princeton, Brown, and
made
others,
you an honor.
Have
honorary
come back to give me honorary doctorates.
It is amazing.
So I find that very ironic, but it goes on my understanding that, you know, talent is universal, but opportunity is not. And that's why I live my life trying to provide young people the opportunity to get an education, because if you believe in them and give them the opportunity, they will make you proud.
Hearing this touching story, Dr. Padron, could you touch briefly a little bit about the late Robert McCabe and his contributions to Miami-Dade?
A great man. Someone who was totally, totally dedicated to the idea of building that school to really play a very important role in this community. He was a mentor to me, someone who I think of him very often because I can see...
Tremendous figure in the community.
Yes, absolutely. I think Miami-Dade College has been blessed with great leadership from the very, very beginning because Peter Masico, who was the president, the first president, was an extraordinary person and really set the basis for what the school needed to be. And we have also had wonderful board of trustees, some of the finest citizens in this community have been members of board of trustees throughout the years who have set a vision, who have been great at supporting the institution.
And yes, I'm glad you added that and a little addendum about the honorary degrees. But you weren't going to go back to Miami-Dade College after you finished and got your bachelor's, then you got your doctorate from University of Florida in economics. Then you got a job with DuPont.
Well, the story really is that when I came here, went to Miami High, etc., my idea of the American dream was to get very rich, have a lot of money. So what I did was to study economics and finance just to, you know, have the tools to actually do that, become very rich. And all my schooling was to prepare to work for a large corporation, you know, join the corporate world. And so when I was finishing my doctorate, it was a good time in America. I had quite a few job offers. I got to see the United States, most of the United States, the first time through what they used to call field trips, in which they would pay you to go and interview at the company. So I went to the West Coast for the first time. I went to Boston, Chicago, New York, paid for a company to interview. And I had accepted a job with a DuPont company in Wilmington, Delaware, a fantastic job. As assistant to the worldwide planning director for a young PhD graduate, that was a big, big thing. But I also came to visit my former professors at Miami-Dade College to give them the great news. And my professors basically were sort of, I will not say shocked, but they were concerned that I would go and work for the what they used to call the corporate monster,
right,
as opposed to coming back and paying my dues and teaching. So they gave me a real guilt trip. And after 2 weeks of going back and forth, etc., I decided that I was going to stay and go to Miami-Dade and teach for a year and then go and make money.
That would be your give back and that would be enough.
Right. And I made it very clear, 1 year and 1 year only, right? And it's interesting how the turns of life. Halfway into that year, not even halfway, I knew that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I found my calling, I found my religion there because I saw the power that I had in me to influence and motivate students. And I've been there ever since. I have never left. I've been there. I've been very fortunate to do almost every job that there is at Miami-Dade College, so nobody can tell me stories. And I just feel very privileged to have the position that I have today because I'm very passionate about it. I think that it's a very unique institution playing a very important role in America today. And no question that it is the greatest equalizer we have in South Florida. And that is a privilege to be able to do that every day.
You know, you said you thought the American dream was to have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
What is your concept today of the American dream?
The American dream to me today is, I think the closest word that I can come up with is opportunity. This is the land of opportunity. And that's what the American dream should be all about, is for people to have an equal opportunity through hard work, dedication, to be able to achieve their goals in life, to be able to get a job that would allow them to support their family, to be able to buy a home, to be able to have a decent life, to be able to enjoy freedom, to be able to enjoy, to live in a place where you are not intimidated, where you have the right of, you know, free speech, where you have all the important values that make America such a special place. And that's what I think we all strive to do. And sometimes I worry that some of those opportunities are no longer there for a lot of people.
Right.
And I believe that education is the only way to get people out of poverty, is the only way to really provide them the tools so they can help themselves. The problem is many of them have difficulty reaching those, you know, college, having that opportunity. And so the more we're able to do that, I think the better this country is going to be.
You're the chair of the White House Initiative on Educational Excellence for Hispanics, Dr. Mm-hmm. Padron. What about this idea that seems to be promulgated by that organization to somehow set up a free community college experience for any student who deserves it?
Well, you know, Joe, when you consider the fact that in the 21st century knowledge economy, most of the jobs, as a matter of fact, two-thirds of all the new jobs that are being created in the United States today require some sort of post-secondary education. You need to reflect on how you make that opportunity available to citizens. If you look as recent as 40 years ago, most Americans could go into offices or factories doing repetitive tasks with their hands and be able to earn a wage high enough to be able to support their family, buy a home, put their children to school, most of them staying a job for 30 years and retire with a good pension, right? That's no longer possible. And today, the only way to get those kind of jobs requires skills, requires knowledge that were not necessary before. And you can only get those skills and knowledge by going to college. So, goes back to your question. While going to college before was a privilege for relatively few people in our country, today I think it's an imperative for anyone that doesn't want to stay in the cycle of poverty for the rest of their lives. So this is the same argument we had about 100 years ago about high school. Most people do not know that or do not remember that. But there was a big argument in this country whether high school should be provided free to citizens. And the argument was won by saying, yes, if we want America to prosper, if we want America to move forward, we need to provide every citizen the opportunity to have a high school degree, because that was what you needed to get a job. Today, I present to you the idea that in order for us to really move our country forward, we need to find a way of providing citizens the opportunity to get at least 2 years of college at a very affordable rate, or free, or some kind of a combination that allow them not to sacrifice going to college because of lack of resources.
It's pretty affordable now at Miami-Dade.
Well, Miami-Dade College is the most affordable institution you can find anywhere.
Less than $4,000.
Absolutely. And the net cost is much less than that, because we provide a lot of financial aid to students mm-hmm. who have need. So the net cost of going to Miami-Dade College is much less than $4,000, quite a bit less. And to some of us, it may not look like much, but for many people who I see every day, paying $1,000 or $1,500 to go to college every year, it represents a major investment, because we're talking about people and families that live on $18,000 a year or $20,000 a year. It is very difficult.
We're going to take a short break, but before we do, I want to read this email from Bob. Thanks to Miami-Dade Community College, I was given a second chance. I did not get accepted due to several universities out of high school due to poor grades. Thanks to Miami-Dade Community College, I was given a second chance. I graduated with honors, and then I went on to a local university and graduated with honors as well, and have led a fulfilling and stable career over the last 25 years in healthcare. Had a fulfilling career. Thank you, Miami-Dade College.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. Thank you.
We're speaking with Dr. Eduardo Padron, the president of Miami-Dade College, and he's been selected to serve on posts of national prominence by six American presidents. A short break. We'll come back and take your call. Stay with us.
Completing a half marathon can be an attainable goal when you train with Team Footworks. The Miami Beach Halloween Half Marathon training program begins Saturday, July 9th. You can race along with ghosts, goblins, and witches, but you don't have to be scared. Team Footworks will be there to guide you from start to finish. Their program is designed for the everyday person, whether you're a walker, a runner, or a combination of the two. Information at teamfootworks.org or 305-666-RACE. We're funded by WLRN members and by Comcast Business. Businesses depend on the internet and need service that they can depend on. Comcast Business, internet, voice, and TV. Built for business. There's good news if you're interested in magnet schools. Limited seats are still available for this coming school year in Miami-Dade County. There's more information at miamimagnets.org.
And we're back. It is today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Dr. Eduardo Padron, of course, he's the president of Miami-Dade College. We're having him on for a profile on this hour of topical currents. As promised, we'll take some phone calls. Bonnie, we'll start with one call, maybe take an email or two also. First up, we have Denise in Miami Beach. Hi there.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Hey, doctor, I want to thank you. It was my birthday last week, and every year I get a card from you, a postcard, wishing me happy birthday. And also, I'm an alumni of Miami-Dade Community College back in the 90s, and I just got back from France after 6 years, and I was a young woman, and I met someone, and Hurricane Andrew happened, and everybody had a population explosion, including myself. And I was a mom. And I was a mom, and I was taking classes, four classes at a time, working full time. And my son also went to the YWCA right there, Miami-Dade College. So I'm a proud alum, and I'm a New Yorker also. So I was raised in New York public schools, so I'm used to being with people from all over the world. My family was from all over, too. So thank you, sir, and rock on.
Thanks, Denise.
Thank you, Denise.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Our telephone number, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Next up, it's Palmetto Bay caller, Roy. Hi there.
Hello. Good afternoon, Dr. Perlerone. We share something in common. We are both Miami-Dade graduates, and I wound up after going to serve to a graduate school in Vermont, getting an internship in Miami-Dade, and wound up staying there for 35 years as a professor. And wanted to say I was never bored. Burned out at times, but never bored. And I had a marvelous experience. And I wanted to thank you and for your service and for what you've done for Miami-Dade College.
Thank you so very much. It's so nice to hear.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you, Roy.
Thank you.
As these calls come in and as Richard gets them, we talked about the cost of going to Miami-Dade College, the low cost. I want to ask how challenging it is to get your funding. Where do you get it from? Most of it, does it come from Tallahassee? And how has that waned over the years?
Well, as you know, we're a public institution supported by the state of Florida for most of our revenues. Unfortunately, at one point, 75% of our revenues came from the state. Today is less than 50%. And it has gone down. And it's very difficult to make the ends meet, especially when your main goal is to try to keep tuition low.
Right.
So everyone has an opportunity. And when your state resources are low or going down, something has to go up in order to make up for that. And we basically do everything possible to not increase tuition, because we know that every time we increase tuition, even if it is a few dollars per credit, for a lot of people, that's the difference between putting food on the table and going to school. And to us, that's the most important thing we need to do in this community is, again, open the door of opportunity very wide so people have a chance.
I suppose that includes a foundation.
Absolutely, yes.
Is that the most difficult? What is your greatest challenge as president? Is the funding probably the most difficult aspect?
My greatest challenge is having the resources to really do two things. One, maintaining the quality of the education that we provide at the highest level. And that's what has distinguished Miami-Dade. Miami-Dade has a reputation nationally. Actually, it's more recognized nationally than it is here for the quality of its program. We have a teaching faculty that is second to none. And our students transfer to universities all over the country, and they do fantastic. They do extremely well, and that's because of the quality programming, the quality program education that they received at the college. But having the funds to maintain the quality, especially in an era of technology when software and hardware cost so much, it's difficult. And the other thing is, being competitive, being able to pay our faculty and our professors.
Right.
The right salaries, so we're able to keep them and to be able to attract good talent, to be able to teach our students and not shortchange them in any way.
And another caller, this is Alan in Miami. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Alan, and I want to thank you, Professor Perdone, first of all, actually Dr. Perdone, for all you've done for people like me. I'm a Miami-Dade graduate. From years back, I went on to graduate with honors from FIU. I went to Boston University. My question for you is regarding the student loan crisis that we're experiencing here in the country, and it also has to do with limits, financial aid limits. A lot of students like me have graduated. I have a family to support, and I needed to actually get the extra money, and I'm left, in the hole for a lot of money when I'm done. And there's also the time frame with which you have to finish. I'm currently a grad student, and I was not able to finish to qualify for financial aid because of the time it took me to finish, regardless of my grade level. So I'm wondering what educators like yourself are proposing to help resolve this issue for students like me. And I'll take my answer off there. Thank you very much.
What kind of overhead did you incur?
We're talking about $200,000.
Oh my God!
Over the course of 6 years of study, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot.
And I don't earn much in my job. I work full time. At the time I went to school, full time as well as working full time. I have a child to support, and you do what you have to do to survive and to make ends meet. And I did what I did. But I was not able to finish as a result because it took me too long.
Dr. Perdone,
your thoughts? That's basically where I'm at, and that's my question.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm really sorry to hear about your story because, unfortunately, you're not alone. So many people find themselves with such big, big loans. We at Miami-Dade, a very small percentage of our student body feels the need to get loans because our financial aid system is very generous. And most of them, take advantage of the Pell Grant, which is a national, national grant
right.
that is given to students. And because our tuition is so low, the problem is that many universities are charging very, very high tuition because of different reasons I'm not going to get into. But the
right.
fact of the matter is that that doesn't help people like you to be able to complete your education and to be able to do it in such a way that you don't end up with such a debt that you are trapped for the rest of your life. So I'm sorry to hear about it. I wish I could give you any other advice.
You want to take one more call before our break?
Okay, next up we have Ernesto in Doral. Hi there.
Yes, sir. Hey, how are you? I'm going to keep it real short. I just wanted to say Miami-Dade County North Campus, shout out to the Sharks. They really saved my wife and I's lives. Both of us are ex-military. We served for 6 years, her in the Army, me in the Air Force. And when we graduated from high school, neither one of us thought that we would go to college. But once we got back, we had people that had already gone to Miami-Dade North Campus, alumni there, and they convinced us to go, and it's been the greatest thing. Both of us have graduated with our bachelor's, her in education, me in public safety management. I'm trying to get into law school as we speak, and she's actually teaching. She's already completed her master's, and she's on the road to try to be an assistant principal. And we cannot do it without, you know, the faculty at Miami-Dade North. I mean, their professors and doctors are incredible, and they work with all the students. And I just wanted, you know, tell the president and the doctor, Perdón, to, you know, very, very much thank you. And, you know, just keep up the great work, because I know people like me who never thought they would go to college one day will be there. And if it wasn't, like he said, to have that door wide open for us, you know, to be able to take advantage of that. So thank you. Thank you very, very much.
No, thank you for sharing your story, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service, Ernesto.
Thank you. Thank you. Great show. I love Topical Concurrence. You guys are great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We're speaking with Dr. Eduardo Padron, the president of Miami-Dade College. And we just want to ask you to be patient. We have a board full of calls. We're going to take a short break. When we get back, we'll get to as many of you as we can.
You can earn a top-ranked AACSB-accredited MBA from Florida Atlantic University in just 23 months. FAU offers a fully online MBA, a professional MBA on weeknights, and an executive MBA on weekends. FAU's MBA programs are top-ranked in the U.S. for return on investment. Programs are designed for busy working professionals and offer VIP service. The GMAT is waived for qualifying students. You can register today for the July 9th information session and get program information at faumba.com. WLRN's fiscal year ends on June 30th. Help us to meet our budgeted goal and keep bringing you great news and programs all year long. Become a member or make an additional gift by visiting WLRN.org.
You can pay your Miami-Dade water and sewer bill online, anytime, anywhere. You can pay with your credit card, pay with your bank account, or enroll in AutoPay to receive paperless billing and pay online. Sign up information at miamidade.gov/water.
And welcome back to Tuesday's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Dr. Eduardo Padron, of course, an educator and president of Miami-Dade College. And we're going to continue with our phone calls. I believe we have, who is that, Steve?
Yeah, we'll go to Steve in Miami. Hi there.
Hi. Question for Dr. Padron. Several questions. Number one, is your funding comparable that which the University of Florida and Florida State receive? And if not, where do you attribute the problem? Number two, are you hiring sufficient number of tenure track as professors as you would like, as opposed to adjuncts? And number three,
Steve, we can't take too many. We have about 10 other calls.
Okay.
So
let's leave it at the two.
Dr. Thank Padron. You very much.
Well, we only get a fraction of what FSU and UF, my alma mater, get to educate students and to provide basically the same education that we provide. Because in Florida, one good thing is that we even have a common course numbering system. And so the courses are basically the same for the first 2 years. But this is something that we've been working very hard to change, because I feel that, in fact, our students need more support than the students that go to those two universities that are great universities. I'm very much support them. But the fact of the matter is that many of the students who come to us have special needs that need to be dealt with. But there is a big difference in terms of the funding. And the second question, I forgot. I have to be honest. What was it?
Number of adjunct professors.
To me, it's very important to have full faculty who are tenure, who are on campus, because not only they teach, but they work with the students. They spend time coaching students, mentoring students, and developing curriculum and working on different projects. So that's very, very important. We try very hard to have and maintain a good portion of our faculty as full-time. Because again, as I said, they make a difference in terms of the time they're able to provide to the students.
We've talked about quite a bit of the commitment of Miami-Dade College to educate students so they can get better jobs and better employment levels. But talk about a little bit about the cultural and artistic contributions of the college, which are sizable in this community.
Start with the book fair.
Well, you know, we strongly believe that education is not just what happens in the classroom with a professor and students, But education is much more than that. It's the opportunities you provide the public in general to be able to learn, to be able to appreciate art. And one best example is Miami Book Fair International, which takes place every year. Actually, it's year-round now because we have programs going on all year.
But we had a booth at the first one right down here. There were about 10 booths.
Uh-huh.
What year was the first one?
Oh, like 79, 78, something like that.
Yes, that's how long ago. But it's a magnificent program, attracting hundreds of thousands of people. It's the largest and the finest in the country, and brings over 600 different writers from all over the world every year. And it's a celebration of the written word. It is a magnificent, and it's a family affair. There are programs for everyone. And that program can be seen anywhere in the nation. Because C-SPAN and other networks cover that, some of them live, some of them only portions. But it's a program that makes Miami shine, and it's something that we're very proud to have founded and to be able to manage that program every year.
And what about the film festival?
That's another program that I love, because the film festival has now grown. It's a festival that now has been recognized internationally, brings the best in film, the best in from the industry to Miami every March, to the delight of Miamians and tourists. And again, another wonderful cultural activity that the college is very proud to do.
Dr. Padron, a little more about you. I understand you're quite an art collector. You specialize in glass and maybe some of your other recreational activities you do during downtime.
Well, I wouldn't call myself a collector. I think that would be very pretentious on my part. I just buy pieces that I like and keep them. And so many now that I cannot display them all. I have them in storage.
I'd say that's a collector.
But yes, glass is my favorite, physical object because of the transparency of the glass. Just the way I like people to be transparent. I love glass because of the transparency. And I especially like Venetian glass. And so I have a few pieces of Venetian glass, but I collect glass of all kinds. And it gives me joy to be able to have, those pieces and share them with friends and with students.
And your family. Tell us about your family.
Well, I am very, very privileged to have a wonderful son who have given me two wonderful grandchildren.
How old are they?
They are not children anymore. They don't want me to call them children.
Okay.
The boy is 21, who's an incredible young man. And the girl is 16. They are both in school.
Where are they in school?
Well, the girl is at Coral Gables Senior. And I was very proud that she chose to be at public school. And the boy is at FIU right now, completing his senior year in the School of Business.
Okay, let's take another call. We've got Jose in Miami. Jose, go ahead.
Oh, hi, how you doing? What a great show again. I just want to give thanks to Dr. Padron. I went to Miami-Dade. I never even graduated actually from high school. I took the equivalency and went into the Army for 9 years and went to Iraq. And I came back, and Miami-Dade opened arms to me. And from there, I went to FIU. And then eventually I became a physician, and I make a lot of money, and it's all back to Miami-Dade. I still keep my memories from Miami-Dade. Thank you very much, Dr. Padron.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jose. Thank you for calling. I see that, we don't have time to mention all your awards, but here and abroad, but last month you received the 2016 Miami Herald Visionary Award in Education, so we congratulate you for that. What does that mean to you?
Well, what it means to me is a recognition that really extends to the entire Miami-Dade College family. Because, anybody who feels that one person can do what happens there doesn't have a real good idea of how we do things. I am privileged to work with people that are totally dedicated and passionate about what they do. We're fortunate at the college to have a team of faculty and students and support staff that goes there every day knowing what their mission is, with a smile, helping people, changing people's lives. And it doesn't get any better than that. It's is an institution that I think is deserving of a lot of recognition because of that, because of the role that it has played in building a better Miami for all.
And talk about a little, because you could do outreach with all the schools, with elementary schools, junior high, senior high.
We start recruiting them from early on.
You could say school. That.
We have, especially now in the summer, we have all kind of camps for students in not only in all areas that you can imagine for young people to start letting them know that college is possible and that they can prepare early on. And we work with high schools and we work with the junior highs and all the schools, really providing them with information and opportunities to know that there is a better future out there and that Miami-Dade College has the doors open to them.
We're very short on time, Dr. Padron, but could you also touch on virtual and online education in Miami-Dade College?
Yes, we have about 18,000 students that choose to take some of the classes online. We have complete degrees that students can complete online. What we find is that most of the students enrolled in those courses, though, are students who are also taking face-to-face courses. And it's an option that is good for students to have because so many of our students work full-time and have family responsibilities and children, etc. So being able to take a course at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning,
right,
or a Saturday or a Sunday online is a great opportunity for people to be able to complete their degrees.
So where do we go from here? Where did you go from here? Where does Miami-Dade College go from here?
Well, Miami-Dade College, as I see it, has a great responsibility to continue to be the equalizer, the person who gives, like the callers, every caller who calls, they have one thing in common, and that is that the door of opportunity was open to them, and they are who they are today because of that opportunity. We need to make sure that we have the resources and the support of this community to be able to continue that job.
Well, we want to thank you.
It's been a very interesting hour, Dr. Padron.
Yes, Dr. Eduardo Padron, educator, the president of Miami-Dade College. His work at the college has been hailed as a model of innovation in higher education. He's recognized as one of the top educational leaders in the world, and he's been selected to serve on posts of national prominence by 6 American presidents, including the current one, and internationally recognized by nations and organizations. From student to professor to chair to dean to campus president, and then in 1905, college president, Dr. Eduardo Padron, it's been a pleasure.
The pleasure has been mine, really.
And thanks for tuning in this hour. Apologies to those callers and emailers we couldn't get to. Our program was produced by Polly Landis, technical direction from online coordinator Jason Zopka. Richard Ives is our lead producer. And don't forget about our free audio archives of each program available at our website, WLRN.org, and you may want to pass the program on to a friend or hear it again. And on to tomorrow, Bonnie and I return. We'll look into the great controversy between RCA magnate General David Sarnoff and prolific audio inventor Edwin Armstrong. David Woolley has written the book, The Network, The Battle for the Airwaves and the Birth of the Communications Age. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, thanks for making public radio your companion today. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.